ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going to kill you, Harry Potter. I'm going to destroy you.
I want to see the light leave your eyes!
The Epic Film Guys Podcast. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a very special 3 or 4 months late spotlight for Harry Potter and the Goblet
Harry
of Fire.
Potter.
Year 4. Grab your port keys, gentlemen. It's time to compete in the Triwizard Tournament. As always, I am Nick. I am your intermediate Potter lover. I love the movies, never read the books, and it's really nice to be revisiting this series. And over to our Potter newbie, who's experiencing most of this all for the very first time, Justin, how are you tonight?
I'm great, man. And that is me, Justin, and I am kind of a newbie. As I've said in the previous Potter casts, sounds kind of good, Potter casts. I had watched the first 4 like many, many years ago, so I don't remember them all that well. So I'm revisiting them and then watching the ones I haven't seen.
Is there any wonder he stopped at the 4th one?
Well, we're going to find out tonight. But yeah, I'm glad to be here to talk about these movies. But of course, we have our hardcore Potter enthusiast. I would actually go out as far as saying a Potter expert.
Yeah,
the God of Podcasting himself.
Hello, yes.
I'm a big, big Harry Potter fan. I wouldn't say I'm an expert. There are some people out there who are hardcore experts.
Are you going to at J.K. Rowling on Twitter?
Of course not. I would never do such a thing.
I know more about the books than you, J.K. Rowling. You know there's Potter fans that do that.
Yeah, she gets those constantly. But anyhow, I love the books, read them many times over, and I could practically recite the films. So I'm very excited to be talking about The Goblet of Fire with you all today.
All right. So, again, it's year 4 at Hogwarts. And I got nothing else.
That's right, Nick. So, as Harry enters his 4th year at Hogwarts, the school is host to the Triwizard Tournament, which brings together 3 wizarding schools to compete in 3 dangerous, life-threatening tasks. Ooh. To compete for eternal glory. And so there are 3 champions, 1 from each school, but Harry unexpectedly finds himself the 4th champion, which is unprecedented in the history of the competition. And he soon discovers that someone might have put his name in the running for the competition for a nefarious purpose. And meanwhile, followers of Lord Voldemort, he who must not be named, are gathering. They are gathering, and a storm's beginning to brew in the wizarding world. So that's where we are with this movie. Since we've gotten the plot out of the way, we should talk about what we think of this film. And I know Nick is chuckling over there. Nick, do you have anything to say?
Oh, I'm just waiting to see what he's going to say.
There are great, and I mean great things about The Goblet of Fire. Most of them down to a lot of the casting and a lot of the performances in this film. And there's some really good character work that happens along the way. But this movie is pointlessly stupid because of the way the story is resolved in the end. We'll talk about it. If you've never seen the film, it will be spoiled a little bit later. But, and this, it's my understanding that this is exactly the way it happens in the book too. So it's a problem of back to the source. It is the most ignorantly convoluted shit on the planet. It makes no sense whatsoever. It really exists just so they can have a reason to have a year 4, and then all of a sudden, it's like this other thing is just tacked on the end of it.
Okay, so we'll get to the ending, but your thoughts overall on...
Well, I wanted to just cut in real quick here, because for me, this is all kind of new-ish. The first thing that struck me as soon as this film starts is the visual look of it is very different from the 3 previous films that we had already watched, and it kind of goes out of its way to establish that this is a much darker, even somewhat more scarier
Yeah, I love how the movie opens. It opens with like a snake slithering out of a skull in a graveyard, and the camera
zooms.
You see
lots of skulls. There's a bunch of skulls, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. The camera zooms up, and there's the cloaked statue of death, basically. And then we cut to Voldemort murdering a man in the opening minutes of the film. So it's all pretty intense. Once it gets to the very next scene, which is the Quidditch World Cup, that's where the film starts to take a nosedive that early on, because I remember sitting in the theater going, oh boy, I can't wait to watch the Quidditch World Cup. They're really building this up.
I can't even tell you how disappointed I was, because I didn't know that. I was like, oh my God, the whole set piece is fantastic. They're building it up. It looks visually interesting. And we're seeing our characters go into a place, and I'm like, okay, so when's this going to happen? And then you never, ever see it.
Yeah.
How dare they? Literally, like, I can't even imagine being in the theater and waiting for that scene to happen, and you don't even get to watch the game.
Well, it's my understanding that to talk about this from a book standpoint, and Loisos, you're definitely going to have to chime in on this, but this was a massive increase in length for the book versus, say, Prisoner of Azkaban. Goblet of Fire was like double the length of the previous book. So this was really the first of the Harry Potter films that they had to whittle down into a 2.5 hour movie out of like an insanely long novel.
Yeah, the book is like 700 pages. The movie is the bare bones essentials, essentially, of the plot. So I'm sure when they were sitting down, they were thinking, okay, Quidditch World Cup, it's not necessary for the audience to see the actual game, because what matters is getting the characters to the Quidditch World Cup so you can have that scene after where the Death Eaters attack on the camp.
Yeah.
But it's not satisfactory as an audience member sitting down and they're building up. Here come the teams, and the teams all come out.
Yeah, literally. Like, you see everything. You literally see everything up until the game would begin, and then you don't see the game.
And then cut. Yeah.
It's the biggest blue balls. Like, I mean, seriously, for me, like, like I said, I didn't know that was going to happen. And then I was like, I felt like I was deceived.
Yeah,
betrayed by that.
Initially, in the planning stages, they considered splitting Goblet of Fire into two movies just because of the complex nature of the novel. I don't think that this film succeeds in the approach that they took, because Order of the Phoenix, which is the next film that we will talk about in the next episode, that is a film where, again, the book is literally 800 pages. It is the longest Harry Potter book, and up until that point it was the shortest movie. So that I feel like is a much more successful adaptation. This is just awkwardly paced. It lurches from one set piece to the other. There's no rhythm to the film. It's all very starty stoppy. I think a lot of that comes down to the editing.
Yeah, there are points here where you almost kind of forget that the Triwizard Tournament is taking place. Especially, I believe it's after the first challenge. It's like forever until the second one finally happens, and like they just hit the brakes like full stop on plot development a number of times in the film. And granted, some of that time they're spending focusing on characters, some of which is good, some of which is bad, but I want to talk more about the things that don't work for me in this film. And one of the biggest things is this whole concept of the Triwizard Tournament. Like, I like the idea of a whole bunch of different schools coming together. But listen, I don't give a fuck who the Bo Baxtons and Durmstrang, I don't give a fuck about these schools, because you never do anything to develop them for me as an audience member is anything I should care about. You literally, they're a visual. They're uh-huh. literally the flattest.
Dude, what about the French girls? They show up and like, really?
Yeah.
Like,
they're literally the flattest.
That's literally just eye candy.
Period. Like, they don't do anything. Like, why am I supposed to care about this? Like, especially, and Lois, I should have to touch more about it from a book perspective, but from a film perspective, it doesn't work. It because
devices,
they just don't do anything with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the novel, it's not like they're the most developed characters anyway. But it's fun because Victor Crumb and Hermione start dating, and they touch on that in the movie where Ron gets super jealous. There's more of that in the book.
God, Ron's a bitch in this movie.
Oh my God! Don't even bring that up, dude. It's seriously, like, he really is. And
he's,
I remember you mentioning this. He's a stick in the mud. He's constantly complaining. He's constantly scowling at Harry.
Well,
now, granted, I mean,
It's okay if they want to explore that part of the character, but I feel like
they
rush that to conclusion because they realize they can't have it hampering the rest of the plot. It feels like it's abruptly ended.
There's a lot more, again, with the book, there's a lot more development in Harry and Ron's relationship. Ron comes from a poor family. You know,
he's just a poor boy from a poor family. Sorry.
Exactly. Correct. But he's supremely jealous of Harry. All the attention Harry gets, how rich Harry's family is. And he does start to resent him. And I don't think that's well explained in the plot of this movie. Ron's just pissy for seemingly no real reason.
All of a sudden, like his friend Harry, whom he has trusted for three films now, all of a sudden, like one thing happens, like his name ends up in the Wizard Cup, and Ron's all of a sudden like, bullshit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's why I'm wondering, like, is there like an hour cut from this movie? Like, because nothing is developed, like even between characters. And instead, what we get, the editing in this is so weird. Instead, we get scenes like there's the scene with Hagrid talking to Madame Maxime. They're walking down the hall. And then all of a sudden she like picks like, I don't know if it's like food or like a bug or something out of his beard and eats it. And I'm like, why is this in the movie? Why are we not focusing on the characters that matter in the plot? And why are we not focusing on the core relationship between the trio? Because that is another thing that I feel
it's
like
the
is
most
lacking in this movie.
I think out of all the ones that I watched up until this point, the relationships lack so much. And not only is Ron just arguing and constantly scowling at Harry, but also Hermione, like literally like he's yelling at her. He's jealous at her. Like, I feel like he's just maybe it's the hormones. He's going through puberty. Maybe that's exactly what they were trying to relay. Is that what they're really trying to do? Because if
Ron
they're trying to do that,
to have a crush
I understand
on her.
That. I get that. But I mean, like maybe he just jacked off for the first time and he's like, oh shit, man, now I know what I want. And his hormones, he wants to bang.
All I can think of is Ron Weasley jacking off.
I mean, I'm just saying, this is before when you watch her in this movie, you're like, I'm watching this. I know what she looks like in a few years after this, but I should not be saying that she looks good because of her age during the time when the movie was made. But I'm just saying, just trying to be safe here. Just try to be safe. But
cover
all
your bases, Justin. That's good.
Well, hey, in this day and age, I'm gonna go to jail just for saying something.
Something I think that the movie does well is the action sequences. All of the tasks are done extremely well. So we'll talk about the first task with the dragons. This is a standout sequence for me. The first task and the graveyard scene, which we'll get to, are two of the best set pieces in any of these movies. And they give the dragon so much personality. They give it weight. The dragon looks amazing. The design, it's all incredibly well done. And Harry's flying around the castle on the broom and the dragon's chasing after him. And it's exciting. It's awesome. It's like for the first time you perk up and you go, whoa, this is exciting. This is Harry Potter. This is fast paced action. So I'm a big fan.
Can you answer a question for me? I love that sequence. I'll ask this to both of you. Reviewing it again before we sat down to talk about it, I recognized how amazing that sequence is. But when Harry's like hanging off of the building and like he could just be falling to his death, why is the dragon like crawling on the side of the building rather than jumping off and then just flying and then like killing him, like blowing fire at him and killing him?
Why didn't the eagles just fly the ring to Mount Doom?
It's just like... It's a cool visual. I'm just saying. I just picture it's a dragon.
I think you have to just allow it dramatic license.
I know. I'm just saying. Because I'm like, it's flying all over the place and it's awesome. But then now it's like slowly crawling. I guess suspense builder. I get it. I love that stuff. But
yeah. I mean, I love that sequence as well. I think that's a great sequence to mention. I especially love you get to get all those amazing aerial shots of Hogwarts and everything like that as Harry is chased by the dragon. I really, really love that sequence. I think... probably even more so than the graveyard is definitely something we'll talk about, but I think more so than the lake or more so than the maze, I think that that's my favorite of the three challenges, because I think, at least to me, I feel like the danger is more real for Harry there, maybe because it's his first challenge and maybe because Harry doesn't know what he's going into when he's going into the challenge. So maybe that feels like it's a little more.
Yeah, I love how you don't see the others facing off against the other champions facing off against their dragons. It's just Harry in the tent, and you hear it from the inside of the tent.
That's a good choice.
Great suspense builder. I want to mention the teaser trailer to Goblet of Fire because it blew my mind when I was younger. So when the teaser trailer for this movie first came out, it showed a montage of each of the characters, each of the three characters from each film: Harry from Sorcerer's Stone, then Chamber of Secrets, then Prisoner of Azkaban, then Goblet of Fire. And they did the same with Ron and Hermione. And it was this beautiful montage. And then all they showed after that was the dragon coming out and breathing fire. And it was amazing. Like, I just could not wait for this movie when I first saw that trailer. So I remember being like hyped for that dragon scene. And when it came, it delivered. The lake scene, not so much. It's not as exciting.
I think it's only good because of its character progression for Harry. I like the progression there that he also saves Fleur's sister. I really, really do enjoy that. And
yeah,
it's nice that Harry is like tied for first place in the Triwizard Tournament. But speaking of which, we haven't talked at all. I guess we could probably talk about the third challenge quick before we talk about him. But we haven't talked about Cedric Diggory, man. The man.
Okay. Yeah, I think Robert Pattinson's a great choice. He's everything that Cedric Diggory should be. He's charming. He's handsome. He's a nice guy. Like, he and Harry actually in the books develop a little bit of a friendship, and they're kind of helping each other out throughout the tournament. He's completely underutilized in this movie.
Yeah, it's sad that you don't get, because, and that's something that I've actually read about, that there's much more of a fleshed out relationship between them in the book that you don't get on screen, because they sadly just don't get to share that screen time together. It's heartbreaking.
It's kind of a complex relationship too, because Harry has a crush on Cho Chang, mm-hmm. who is Cedric Diggory's girlfriend. So right. He has this rivalry going on. Yeah, he has a rivalry with Cedric. Cedric's a genuine nice guy.
Yeah.
So at the end, when I guess we're getting into spoilers, but when Cedric is killed, there is little to no emotional effect from the audience, because this relationship hasn't been developed and it's not a character that we particularly care about. The only thing that's heartbreaking about it is when we see Cedric's father's reaction to his body being brought back.
His father isn't his father like the only parent that's present during any of the challenges?
Yeah.
So literally it's like, okay.
It's the only character. I mean, it's the only parent we see.
Right.
Anyhow, but
I was an Uncle Vernon there. God damn it.
I like him in this movie, and I know he gets a lot of shit.
But, I miss the Dursleys in this movie.
Yeah, that's another thing too, is because one of the greatest scenes in the book, Ron's father actually goes to the Dursleys' house to try to convince them to let Harry come to the Quidditch World Cup, and he tries to use flu powder, and he like explodes their fireplace, and it's great. It's great. It's like little scenes like that I wish were in the movie, but you can't have a four-hour movie like that.
I mean, seriously, that, and we've opened there like how many other movies, so I'm glad it opens a little bit differently.
But that's the thing, like, you're so disoriented right from the get-go, because like, as someone who read the books, watching the movie, I had no idea what was going on when they're like going to the woods and they're like, "Dad, where are we going?" It's like, "I don't know. I haven't the foggiest." And I'm like, "Well, you need to let us, the audience, know what's happening in the movie." Like, and then you see characters that you've never seen before, and no one's explaining like what's happening. I mean, exposition's important in a movie, I feel like.
No.
This movie doesn't really have much of that. There's also like weird things and details that I just like don't even know why are in the movie. For example, there's when Harry is in Mad-Eye Moody's office, and we can talk about Mad-Eye Moody too, but when Harry is in Mad-Eye Moody's office and he sees the strange glass on his desk and he's like, "What's that?" And Mad-Eye Moody goes, "It's my faux glass." And then he cackles maniacally, never explaining what a faux glass is. And the faux glass never even comes back into the movie. Like, it's never brought up ever again. In the books, the faux glass, you know, is important. But in the movie, it never comes into play again. So why even have that scene in the movie? Why even have that exchange in the movie? It boggles the mind.
Well, I think a lot of that's going to come down to the fact that you had already stated earlier on, the book was so huge, they condensed it down as much as they possibly could. And whenever you do that, you're adapting a novel into a movie, you're going to cut stuff out. And I think they just looked at what they could keep and what they couldn't keep, and they just made creative decisions, and some of it works and a lot of it doesn't.
I can't blame them for that. And especially looking at it through the context of someone who knows the whole series. So there's this whole thing with Dobby in the books that if they had put it in the movie, would have,
poor Dobby,
what happens eventually would have been stronger. It's frustrating as a viewer, but I understand. Like, I understand they can't have a 5-hour long movie. Like, I understand that, although it is painful because when you watch the movie and see how disjointed and awkward it is. But we do get a lot of nice stuff, nice character stuff. There a lot of great stuff at the Yule Ball that I really enjoy. Harry's awkwardness when he dances for the first time, and Hermione coming out in her ball gown and having her Cinderella moment.
Where she stops kind of everyone in their tracks. Yeah.
Yeah. The cliche shot of her walking down and everyone stops to look at her.
It's nice.
She's walking down the stairs. It's cute. It's cute. Yeah. It's still giving those cutesy-wootsy moments that we had in the first few, whereas this film, again, like I said, is trying to go a darker route and kind of get more adult. We still have those kind of cute moments to, aww.
It is the first Harry Potter film to be rated PG-13. Ooh. So it's when stuff starts getting serious.
So, yeah,
children start dying.
Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to transition. There's a number of new characters that we have to talk about. We've talked about Cedric Diggory, criminally underused. I agree 100%, Loisas. There could have been way more done with his relationship with Harry in this film. But we got to talk. I mean, and of course, we'll talk about the spoiler, the twist in the film as well. But first of all, can I say how much I absolutely adore Brendan Gleeson as Mad-Eye Moody?
He's perfect.
Holy shit. Is he amazing?
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I've had teachers like that in school growing up where he would just randomly shout and scare people and make sure they were paying attention. Constant vigilance, throwing chalk at people. It's great. It's the teacher that we've all had in school. And I love his character, especially moments where his character is allowed to be a little bit mischievous. For example, the amazing scene with Malfoy when he turns Malfoy into a little ferret.
Oh my God.
One of the best parts of the movie.
It was fantastic. I love it. And he just looks like, when I think of a character, I feel like out of all these movies I've watched up until this point, he looks the most already like a character you'd think about in your head when you're reading a story like this. Uh-huh. And he just fits it perfectly.
He is absolutely one of my favorite additions to the entire saga's cast. I absolutely love him. But of course, spoiler alert, we find out at the end of the film that Mad-Eye Moody was actually Barty Crouch Jr. in disguise the whole time, drinking Polyjuice Potion. And he, of course, is played by the 10th goddamn Doctor.
Your boy, Doctor Who.
And I actually, this is one of those things I never paid attention to the first time I watched this movie, but I love those subtle visual clues that Gleason gives in his performance to let you know that there's something, especially like the way that Tennant always licks his lips and stuff like that.
Oh, but that's so obvious. There's no mystery. Once you see the flashback scene.
I never noticed
scene,
it the first time in the film.
Oh, though. Man. It bothers me because once you see it, the flashback scene the first time when Tennant does that like flick with his tongue.
Yeah.
And then like in the next scene, Moody does it.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, so you know already. There's
I don't know.
No
I think
mystery
it just flew
in this.
Over my head. But I love Tennant.
That's not in the book.
Is Barty Crouch Jr. in the film. Absolutely love
him. He's good for the two scenes that he's in.
But we also, for the first time now, get Ray Fiennes.
Oh my God. The graveyard scene. We have to talk about
the
graveyard
Lord
scene.
Voldemort himself. And the graveyard. This is my least favorite Harry Potter film. I cannot stress that enough. I think that the whole Portkey thing is a sack of shit. It's dumb.
Why?
Because why does Harry have to go through the Triwizard Tournament to get all the way to the end of it to touch a portkey to go to the graveyard?
I guess pretense. I don't know.
There's
I guess
literally no reason why that has to be what has to happen. There's no reason why he has to go through the Triwizard Tournament whatsoever to get to the graveyard to be, to whatever for Voldemort. There's no reason. None of it has to be in here to get to the ultimate climax of the film,
And if Voldemort needed Harry's blood in order to resurrect himself, then why put him in a tournament where he almost he could die? Yeah, at
exactly.
Any moment?
Like, there's no reason. That's the one thing that I dislike about this movie so much, because the whole thing's irrelevant. Because literally, Voldemort could have made anything a portkey, and Barty Crouch Jr. is already in disguise in the school. Harry's fucking toothbrush could have been the portkey. Like, It doesn't matter what it is, because ultimately the climax of the film is to get Harry to the graveyard to resurrect Voldemort. None of what happens prior to them getting to the graveyard matters a fucking lick whatsoever. Uh-huh. The Triwizard, none of it means anything to that. And I think, like, it's fine. It's like, I enjoy the idea of the Triwizard Tournament, and it is like it's going
to
be.
Isn't it supposed to happen like every 3 years or something? The tournament?
No, no, I think it's every.
It's more than three. I can't remember how many it is though.
Oh, okay. Because I was curious if that's the case. I thought I heard three, but maybe I was wrong. Why we didn't hear about it or why it wasn't established in the previous films.
I think it's
films.
Maybe like,
why
more like every 10 or something like that.
Oh,
I
can't okay. That makes sense. Yeah. All right.
It's some, that's why I dislike this movie the most out of the franchise, because I feel like literally 9/10 of this movie, like ultimately it's fun to watch. There's some good character stuff in there. There's some fun stuff, but ultimately it's meaningless to the climax of this film, which is resurrecting Voldemort. It just feels like, it's just a tacked on part of another story that just doesn't matter. Like, I mean, really, it would have been better if, like, I don't know, like if it would have just happened out of the blue, like in the middle of the Triwizard Tournament, like he's underwater and I don't know, Harry touches a one of those little swimming fish monster thingies and whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
I think Nick, you have a very good point, and this might be explained better in the book, but I don't really recall. But I'm thinking that maybe because Voldemort's return was supposed to be a secret, like, I think Harry competing in the tournament and him dying would have been seen as, like, a tragic accident and not necessarily...
Yeah.
Because students die in a tournament, and if Voldemort were to kill Harry in the tournament, it would seen as, oh, Harry just died while competing in the tournament.
I think it's a
keeping
good...
keeping Voldemort's return a secret.
I think it's a really, really good effort by Rowling to... literally butter up and fillet the biggest, fattest red herring possible to kind of, she throws this whole elaborate tournament setup at the audience to kind of make us forget about the opening scene where we see Justin's favorite character of all time, Scabbers, carrying around that little deformed, that's the creepiest fucking thing in all these movies, that little deformed Voldemort thing. Yeah. That's so creepy. But It kind of like it's just a massive red herring to kind of make you forget about all that before it ultimately comes back at the end of the film. Like, I get it sort of almost from a dramatic standpoint for that, but I still dislike
it. And the whole disguise thing is a little Scooby-Doo. It's a little it's a little cheesy and trite. But before we move on to the graveyard scene, can we talk about Michael Gambon as Dumbledore in this film?
Yes.
I think he gives a bad performance in this.
What, really?
Yeah, I do. Especially everything that we've known about Dumbledore before and everything that the character is about, it's a complete betrayal. Dumbledore's constantly angry. He's shouting all the time, or he looks like he wants to take a nap. There's no like in between. There's no like mischievous Dumbledore. There's no charm. There's no heart, like Dumbledore with heart. In this movie, he's like an angry, bitter old man. I cannot stand the scene. In the books, when Dumbledore finds out that Harry has his name in the Goblet of Fire, he pulls his name out of the Goblet of Fire. He very calmly and very calculated asks, Harry, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? He doesn't grab Harry by the shoulders. Like, literally, he runs up to him. He literally shakes him and throws him against a wall and screams at him, did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? It is so over the top. It's so, like, I know they wanted to make it dramatic, but it's so out of character.
Let me ask you a question.
And Michael Gambon's performance, I just don't think is on the level as... you know, Prisoner of Azkaban or Order of the Phoenix or any of his portrayals in the, later films.
Yeah. Let me ask this question, because this is the only Harry Potter film that we get that's directed by Mike Newell.
Yeah.
So we've seen Gambon give great performances as this character in the other films. So I don't disagree with you, but I think I blame probably as much maybe Newell's direction, like for whatever reason, maybe that's the, like Newell and Gambon had this conversation about the character. Like, let's take him down this direction and see what it does.
I blame it entirely on direction because again, Gambon is good in the other movies. Really good. Yeah. He's great as the character in this movie. I mean, Mike Newell's directed some great movies. He's done Four Weddings and a Funeral, Donnie Brasco,
Into
Prince
the West
of Persia, The Sands of Time with Jake Gyllenhaal. So he's directed some good movies. So, like, I don't know. I think they wanted with this one a like very like British boarding school, like lads at boarding school approach to the material.
Yeah.
And I admire them for that, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of necessarily Newell's direction in this film. But we do get one flawlessly directed sequence in the movie, and that is the climax, which is the graveyard sequence.
Yeah, you told me when I was watching this with you, you just kept saying, just wait, just wait. Because I kept saying out loud, I kept saying, man, Nick was right. Because I, ladies and gentlemen that are listening right now, Nick has been saying this very openly since I've known him, his disdain and hatred of this movie. And it seems like he doesn't hate it that much as we're talking about it right now, but he's publicly come out and bashed this movie on every possible opportunity he's had. So I was sitting there, I'm watching this movie, and I keep turning to Lois House, and I'm like, Nick's right. Oh man, I said to him, I said, I don't even want to finish it. And he keeps going, no, just shut up. Just wait, just wait. And then when we finally get to the end, okay, I give it this much. The graveyard sequence at the end, it's a spectacle. It's beautiful. Kind of, it's well done.
I'll say this.
I love it.
It's kind of worth the rest of the movie that you had to go through to get to it. Because
I would say it is worth it.
Visually especially.
Ray Fine first materialize as Lord Voldemort for the first time, and the Death Eaters come down, and like... Wormtail.
Well, first of all, it starts out nightmarishly because again, Peter Pettigrew comes out with the shriveled, like little
this thing is Voldemort so fucking baby, creepy,
which is creepy. And then he tosses it into a cauldron of boiling hot water. Then he takes Harry's blood, he cuts Harry's hand open, and then he cuts his own hand off. So it's already up to a level that is heightened and terrifying. And then, of course, we get Voldemort, he materializes, and the cloak just kind of, it's phenomenal. Like the way the build up, the way the music, the way everything's built up. And I like the music to this movie too. Patrick Doyle, he did a great job because this is the first film taking over for John Williams. And I thought he did a great job with the score. And then you get his eyes flick open and they're like, you get the snake kind of pupils at first. And then they kind of morph into the kind of more human eyes.
Ray Fine,
and the look of the character. They nailed it. They nailed it. The noseless face and the kind of like the gnarled teeth.
He is delicious as this character. And this character so only gets better as we get through subsequent films in the franchise. Obviously, we'll talk more about those as we get to them.
More about him. But I really can't wait to see more of him.
Legitimately, like, it's chilling. Like, the minute he shows up, like, the scene has that sense of dread that you've always... Like, they talk about Voldemort the first three films, and he's on the back of Quirrell's head in the first film, but you never really get that sense of what Voldemort means. But they nail it the first time you see that character, and the way that they shoot that sequence, the way everything is done about it, and Fine's performance 100% sells exactly what that character represents. Holy shit, the baddest motherfucker in the Wizarding World just came back, and shit's about to hit the fucking... fan.
Exactly. That's a great point. And I love how he moves. It's almost like I watched the special features on this, and the Ultimate Editions have an amazing like 8-part documentary about the series. But I watched the special features, and Ralph Fiennes is talking about how he wanted to move as Voldemort, as if like he's like a dancer, as if he's like
gliding.
He's gliding. This is the longest. Yeah, he's been without a physical body for the longest time. And now that he finally has one, he's like touching himself, touching his head and his face and moving his fingers around. And he's like very much gliding around and just getting used to his physical body again. And it's such a great reading into the character that Ralph Fiennes did. This is how I'm going to move as the character. He's waited so long to finally get his hands on Harry Potter. That part where he's like, I can touch you now. And he like touches Harry's forehead. Like the look that he gets on his face, like he's been wanting to do this for the longest time. And it's like, it's almost like insatiable. It's like, amazing. I just need to harm him. I need to hurt him. And then my favorite line in the entire movie, and one of my favorite lines in the entire series, and one that strikes fear into my heart and perfectly sums up how cold and emotionless and ruthless Voldemort is when Harry's running away from him at the end, and Voldemort has his wand out, and he's like, don't you turn your back on me, Harry Potter. I want you to look at me when I kill you. I want to see the light leave. He says,
a great line.
I want to see the light leave your eyes, is what he says. That's cold-blooded as shit. Yeah. It's great.
He legitimately, like, 100% is every bit as badass as he promises to be from the first moment that they mention you know who, or he who must not be named, way back in the Philosopher's Stone. Like, you immediately get that sense in that scene. And of course, at the end of it, Harry manages to escape, you know, and because he and Voldemort's wands are in tune, So he manages to get out of there and gets the diversion long enough to escape.
They're brothers, as the brother Ollivander says. Yep. The Wands are brothers. Yeah.
So they get back to the stadium, and we get to the scene that Justin mentioned earlier, where, you know, Harry and everybody's cheering, of course, because they just think whatever. And then,
yeah, that's terrifying too. Is it like Harry's everyone's literally like cheering fucking, and like
distraught as shit. And then
great
all of a sudden,
moment for Daniel Radcliffe, like, yeah, great performance in that scene.
They realize that Cedric is dead, and like his dad's reaction, it's like Justin said, is absolutely spectacular, spot on.
Heartbreaking. Yeah.
It is. Even if he is the only parent there, but of course he needs to be there. We need that emotional reaction because we weren't really invested that much in the character in the first place. Yeah. So, I mean, it's shoehorned in, but I get it. So it works, I guess, for the moment, of course.
So, all right. So let's do this. We've got to do some trivia. Loisos is going to get to that in just a second here, but gentlemen, let's run trivia around the horn here. Let's run around the horn and let's slap a number rating on this, and we're going to wrap this up and we're going to get on to Order of the Phoenix, baby. Justin, we'll start over with you.
I wanted to go to the sauce first because I don't want the sauce to copy me. No, we're not doing this again. So the sauce is going first. He's not going to copy me again. He's the Potter guy. We got to hear from him first.
So as someone who's a fan of the book series and the films, I watch this film and I kind of fill in the gaps because I've read the book. As someone who enjoys the film as, I guess, a visual representation of the greatest hits, quote unquote, of what the book has to offer, all the main set pieces are there. It's stripped to the bone, and even like weird random bits of like gristle and fat that don't need to be there. So I have to view this as a film separately. Based on, you know.
Let's hear it. Come on, you're okay. Getting there. You're building it. You're building it. I got to hear it.
As a film, I'm going to have to give it a 5 out of 10. There are great set pieces. There are great scenes. The dragon scene and the graveyard are basically the redeeming factors of this film. Why I sit down to watch it is for those two scenes. Everything else is just kind of, it's either, it's there, or oof, this is not working for me. So 5 out of 10 for me as a film. It kind of pains me as a Harry Potter fan because, again, as someone who's read the books and I love the story so much, as a film, 5 out of 10.
I wonder how many times in this review you've mentioned that you've read the books. I think I've kind of maybe 10 or 12.
Well, I'm not saying
but,
it like
but I love that. I love that because it's very rare
on
this show.
That's why he's here, man.
But we have
that's
someone
why
on here
here.
Like, well, we actually read the book because, well, I usually
yeah,
say, fuck
saying,
it, I didn't
I'm not
read
saying
the
it
book.
To be boastful. I'm saying it because it offers perspective.
Of course it does. And I'm glad that you have. I'm jumping in now. And I'm actually surprised because I'm actually going to give it a better rating than you did. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. I thought it was okay. I thought it had more than a few issues. It was definitely frustrating after watching the previous films leading up to it. But after discussing it with you guys and reviewing it again prior to this discussion, there are some great moments in it. And seeing Voldemort in all of his glory is fantastic. I love the dragon sequence. And there's some great visuals to be had here. My main issue is probably the pacing and the editing. Scenes end very stifled and strange. Like there'll be a couple of lines and then characters will just be like looking off and looking at something. Like there's a scene where Harry and Hermione are on the bridge and it's like a little dialogue scene and they talk and then they're just both looking off and I'm like, okay, what are you looking at? Like, why is it like this? Why does
it's
it feel
meant to
like
be
it's
wistful.
Not connected? No, it's not. It doesn't work. Give me more of the goods. It's up until this point, it's my least favorite of the series, but 6 out of 10 still, it's still fine. It's fine entertainment. It's just not very good. It's fine.
I'm gonna
and Nick gotta hear it gotta hear it. Oh man,
can I give the graveyard sequence one rating and then the rest of the movie another rating?
No, you cannot. No, you're not allowed to,
because the graveyard sequence is a 10 out of 10
it
for
is.
Me
it is great it is. It's a great sequence
and
crossing the streams, man, crossing the streams.
I agree more so with Loisos than I do with Justin here. I'm gonna give it a 5 out of 10, which is just below my recommended grade. I like I said, the whole 9/10 of this movie, the Triwizard Tournament, literally, it means nothing to the ultimate climax of the film, which is the return of Lord Voldemort. That's literally the only redeeming quality of this film. The graveyard scene, which as Loisos said, is a 10 out of 10. It's perfect. It's amazing. Watch it on YouTube and just ignore the rest of the movie because you don't need to see it.
Well, that I disagree with, but
or you could parts, be watching anyway. It if you win the trivia, because Loisauce, you have a trivia question for our listeners, which is going to actually assist you in winning the digital code for the Ultra 4K
all
set of the entire series, all of them
films.
All
that's right. So we're about to get nuts.
That's right. We're that's, getting.
I
nuts.
Don't even think I have Let's that fucking nuts. Sound drop on the board anymore. Jesus.
So, I'm going to read off the question. So listen up. Listeners.
No.
Not you. I'm talking to the listeners.
I can't win?
All those lovely people out there. No.
To be fair, he's listening too. I'm listening as well. So.
Fuck this. I can't win.
Oh, okay.
Alrighty. So, here is the question. Or rather, the task. See what I did there? Name the four dragons that each of the champions face in the first task.
Boom.
Alright, so I'm going to say it one more time. Name the four dragons that each of the champions face in the first task of the Triwizard Tournament. I love that scene where Harry and Hagrid are in the forest and you see the caged dragons, and those are practical dragons too. You see that in the special features as well. So they built animatronic dragons for that sequence, which is pretty impressive.
Ah, the old days of animatronic dragons. I wouldn't see that made now.
No.
Booyah. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Again, the link will be down in the show notes. Woo! For the link to the Google form where you can submit your answers for trivia. Remember, every single correct answer for a Harry Potter trivia question gets you entered to win all 8 films on digital HD. It's an amazing giveaway. And this trivia question and the Order of the Phoenix trivia question will both be up together because we're going to be releasing those two spotlights in kind of short proximity to each other. So again, yeah, make sure you enter both of those questions and get your tickets in there. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to fire off here and we're going to ride our broomsticks away into the sky. I've got an important Quidditch match tomorrow, so I've got to go. So, thank you very much for listening.
I hope I get to see it.
Yeah.
Nick, what position?
I don't know.
I think I would be a good chaser.
They'd shove me in a goal. I'd be a goalie.
A keeper?
Yeah, I'd be a keeper. They'd shove me in a goal.
Right on.
Be
like, just like Ron.
Can't have this bastard trying to chase the goddamn golden snitch. Yeah, thanks.
I'm just thinking of Goldberg from the Mighty Ducks. I'm thinking of goalie, and I'm thinking of Nick, and for some reason, those two connect well together. So,
yeah,
Goldberg!
So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much for listening. We hope you're enjoying our Harry Potter Spotlight series. For those of you who are coming to this after all of them are already released, you can binge all 8 of them, and it's going to be great. For those of you who have been waiting like 4 months since our Prisoner of Azkaban one, we love you. We're sorry. Loisauce and Justin should be sorry, actually.
I'm not sorry.
Months ago.
I was told that there was more Scabbers, like full Scabbers character, and then I found out there wasn't, so they lied to me to get me to watch these movies.
He boycotted the rest of the movies. He's like, nope, I'm not watching them without
At this point, I just know that I'm forced to watch them, but I'm watching them for you guys, and you know what? I've been enjoying them, and they look great on 4K, so that's what it is. And I'm hoping you guys are really enjoying this as much as I am. And especially if you're actually new to the movies and you're watching them along with me, that'd be a fantastic experience as well.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we love you. We really appreciate you listening. Thank you all so, so very much. And until next time, we will see you
at
the movies.
Harry Potter.
Meow, 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 meow.
Get that can out of here.